is the Jose Show. Jose Show.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Jose Show. I am your host, Jose Roldan Jr. And tonight's special guest, you can catch her in the TV show, or more like a reality show, streaming on Discovery Plus, called Pushing the Line. I want to introduce to everybody Mia Noble. I said that right, Mia Noble. Welcome to the show. How are you tonight? Or today, it's night for me, it's earlier for you.
Yeah, it's about 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm happy to be here.
Cool. I'm glad to have you. So, like I told you earlier, I had interviewed Ryan Jinks, and, you know, so it was pretty cool. I started watching this when I saw it pop on Discovery Plus, and, man, I tell you, all you guys have guts. I mean, you know, seeing you guys walking this one-inch rope, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, and watching you do that, man, my gut just cringes, my heart just, like... You know, so it's kind of crazy. So now let me ask you this. At what age did you decide you wanted to actually do this? Did you think about it when you were like in your teens or?
Well, actually, it's a funny story. I grew up in Nelson, BC, a small town in Canada, in BC. And I remember when I was maybe 7 or 8, I saw a poster of Dean Potter, an American climber, base jumper, wingsuit pilot, highliner as well. And I remember seeing that poster of him highlining, and it appealed to me. And I was like, oh, it'd be lovely to know what it is and you know, maybe do that one day. But not really, at least it wasn't back then without parents in that sport already to be able to just, you know, highline. But it always appealed to me. And the first image of highlining definitely came really early.
Oh, that's cool. See, I didn't know anything like this existed. I mean, I've seen people walk the tightrope course at circuses. And then there's people that walked over the Grand Canyon. But I didn't realize until I saw this TV show that this is really a sport and everybody puts their heart into it. And I couldn't do it, man. I have a hard enough time walking on the ground, let alone, you know, 500-600 feet or higher. You know, it's just definitely scary. Now,
yeah, it's a learning process.
Now, the first time you ever did this, what were you feeling? Was you scared? Were you anxious? Or were you just cool as a cucumber?
I was definitely terrified. I was also super excited because I had, as I said before, seen a picture of highlining when I was quite young, but I only started in my 20s. But it was definitely something that appealed to me from a very young age. So when I finally found the people that were doing it and they were around me, I was so excited. So I bought a harness. I didn't even know how to tie a figure eight tie into how you tie into your safety leash. And I just showed up one day in a West Van and was so excited to just be there that I feel like the excitement was like enough that I just went out there and I tried my hardest. So it was definitely terrifying, but I think the excitement was even more.
Wow, I can imagine. Now, when you did try it, let's say, prior to the first time, did you actually like have ropes tied between two trees or something like that, you know, a few feet off the ground just to kind of practice a little bit?
Yeah, I definitely had like a slack that I put between two trees, and I probably, you know, 15, 20 times in the park or so before that. And I think I had one for a bit over than a year, but I didn't set up that often. I used to figure skate and then short track speed skate. So I did, I was quite busy with those sports that I never really had that much time to put into the slacklining because I was kind of split into a few different things, but I had definitely a few sessions under my belt before I showed up to my first highline.
Wow. That's amazing. So yeah, definitely. It's something that takes practice. You know, it's, I can imagine going out there, but you know, just watching you actually in your bare feet, you know, I guess with barefoot, you can kind of hug the rope a little bit or the line, you know, more so, unless now when you guys do it, that wear the shoes, do they wear like a thin sole, or does a lot of them actually wear, go barefoot?
Most people, I feel like, go barefoot. But there's definitely people that prefer their shoes, and it's really a matter of preference, because like what you think of like in a circus or anything like that, it's a steel, like cable wire. And that's a lot harder on feet, but a slackline, what we walk on, are just like a 1-inch kind of piece of nylon or polyester. So it's a lot softer on the feet, and it's a flat webbing, so you can just kind of nicely put your foot on it. And once you get used to it, you feel quite grounded. You just, you know, so stable on the line. Sometimes almost feels like a sidewalk.
That's crazy. So when I watch everybody and you get on the line, you know, I noticed that you kind of somewhat straddle the line, and you get past the rocks until it kind of dips down, and then you have to have a good leg strength, upper body strength, because literally you guys just kind of lift yourself up and you stand up. Like even when I was young, you know, in my teens, and I was skinny, I'm not as skinny as I used to be, I had a hard time doing that. So I imagine you have to do training to keep your muscles toned, to be able to do that, because I know I couldn't even straddle the line. I'd literally tip over. So how do you guys do that to stay in shape for that?
I think really most people, you know, just slackline a lot, and that kind of is what keeps them in shape. And depending on where you live and where you are, like sometimes there's a lot of hiking involved to get to locations where we highline. So just the fact of like putting all the gear in your backpack, putting the backpack on and walking up a mountain, just that keeps you in shape. And the pulling of the line across, all the rigging stuff, you're always quite active doing some things. And then you need to access by climbing. So there's all these different things that kind of come with the sport that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure some people go to the gym and, you know, go do your typical gym workout or go for runs. But usually just the whole of the sport outside makes you, you know, quite fit and quite strong with what you need to do to highline.
Oh, wow. That is just crazy. So that does make sense, because of all the, I've seen you guys in those episodes climbing up the sides of the mountain there in Moab, Utah, and all the other places you went, and, you know, carrying these big backpacks with all your gear. And I mean, you got to have literally good body strength. I mean, them backpacks are huge, carrying your ropes and stuff like that. So, man, I tell you, you guys are really good. And I really liked how they filmed it, and they used the drones to get aerial views, because, you know, you see more with the drones, because literally they're flying right above your head and showing the top view, the side view. Now, when you're walking and you see those drones, do you lose focus, or does it not bother you seeing those drones?
Well, at first, when I first kind of started highlining, and we had a local guy around that filmed a bunch of what we were doing, and I remember being quite bothered by Joe and seeing these big mosquitoes and quite distracting. And I was already like having to take in so much just by, you know, trusting the gear and trusting yourself and be able to walk, that it took a while to really become comfortable. But for the show on Pushing the Line, it was at that point, I'm so used to having drones fly around, you kind of just ignore them. They're there, you know, they're there, but not really. So you're just doing your thing. So it depends.
I can imagine I would be like trying to swat at the sucker as it's flying by myself.
Yeah. If it comes too close, I'd probably make a sign to tell them to
like get away.
To get away, yeah. But yeah, most of the time it's totally fine.
So how did everybody get approached to be on Pushing the Line? Like was it you approached last year, or when did that happen?
Well, originally Spencer on the show, I remember I used to live in Vancouver. In a shared house where Spencer and a bunch of other slackliners lived. And I remember first hearing about it because they were talking to Spencer about this potential show. And it was kind of unsure, especially with COVID. Like it happened before COVID, they were starting to talk, and then kind of COVID happened. All that became a bit more common. I had forgotten about the whole thing. But then one day they were like, yeah, no, we're getting close. We're pretty ready to do it. And it was time to decide if I would be a part of it or not. So it kind of was something that was in and out for quite some time before it actually came about.
Oh, well, now did you get paid for doing this, or is it just,
it was a paid gig for sure.
Yeah. Cause I was wondering okay. So when you're not slacklining and highlining, do you actually have a job, or is this, you do this full time? Cause it seems like, on your Instagram, there's all kinds of pictures of you everywhere. So, oh, okay. Yeah. So when you're slacklining and you got paid for Pushing the Line, what do you do when you're not walking the line? Do you have a job, or is this what you do full time?
It depends. I've done quite a few slackline gigs here and there. And like sometimes it was not necessarily paid gigs like the show with Pushing the Line, but sometimes like, you know, your flight's covered and it's like you're expense free for projects. But I've been kind of doing all kinds of stuff here and there. I've sometimes work at the ski resort in the winter. I change things up. I do all kinds of things. But usually I don't look for ways to make money off of slacklining, but when the opportunity comes, I take it.
Might as well take it. I tell you, I've been to British Columbia back, oh man, that's like 5 or 6 years ago. And I don't remember the area, but I do know the area that we were at, there was one of those, it was like a rest stop type area, and there was a big, huge green earth moving truck. And, you know, I stood by it and got my picture taken, you know, drank Tim Horton coffee. So British Columbia is so beautiful. And I was there, I think around June or July. Beautiful place.
Well, nice time to be around, yeah.
But I love Tim Horton coffee. I brought some back with me on the plane.
Nice.
Yeah, because Tim Horton is like a Starbucks here to America. You know, it's all over the place. And, man, I wish we had one here in Florida because I live in Central Florida. But so now let me ask you this. Since you've been highlining, have you had any of your friends pass away doing it? Because, you know, if they do base jumping and the chute doesn't open, or walk in the line and something happens, the safety measures are just not there, or maybe they made a mistake putting it on. Like, how many friends have you lost doing this?
Yeah, so I think we have a couple technical difficulties or internet connection, but I just got your answer. In highlining itself, I had one person that I knew from Italy that I spent some time slacking with that did pass away from a human error mistake on the highline, but there's not that many deaths regarding like with highlining. It's quite a safe sport because once you've done your rigged right, your line's out, it's pretty safe. I definitely have a few friends in the base jumping and wingsuiting world that had accidents, but overall it's a pretty safe sport when it comes to the highlining itself.
Okay, that's pretty cool. We're going to go ahead and take a commercial break. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turf Sup Radio.
Attention all veterans. Have you heard about Turf Sup Radio's Jobs for Vets program? If you are looking for a job and you're interested in working in the landscape and snow removal profession, there just might be a company in your local area that is looking to hire. All you have to do is send us your resume at jobsforvets@turfsupradio.com. That's jobsforvets@turfsupradio.com. Turf Sup Radio, your industry, your station.
And welcome back to The Jose Show on Turf Sup Radio. Tonight we're talking with Mia Noble, who is a highliner on the TV show Pushing the Line, streaming on Discovery Plus. So, okay, so before you get on the wire or the line, safety is key. So when you're setting up the line, rigging it and all that stuff, do you actually go over the rope and look to make sure there's nothing that's frayed or any slight cuts or anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you notice on the show when you see there's the line that we're walking on, there's also a loose line underneath that kind of makes kind of a curtain like underneath, and that's our backup.
That's good. So I've seen that.
Yeah, it's not under tension, but it is there in case. And so always you have to tape. How it holds together is actually electrical tape usually, or some kind of tape that we tape sticking on one line and it slides on the other, so it kind of equalizes nicely along the whole line. So whenever you're taping, you're running your hands through, making sure that everything, the main line's flat, the backup's flat. So you're kind of inspecting it every time that you tape it and you're sending it out. You know, you always have your hands to release it or something. You always get that last glance and make sure everything's good, and you'll stop if something's not.
I know, like I told you earlier, when I first started watching the first episode and I seen, you know, everybody walk out on the line, and man, that first drop, man, my stomach just, you know, when you see somebody get hurt, even though they're not getting hurt, your stomach just like you cringe because you kind of feel what they feel. And man, I tell you that first time I was like, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, where'd that come from? Do you hear that noise? Oh, that's
my, I do hear it, yeah.
That's my phone. And I could have swore it. Hold on. That's weird. Okay. So I'm going to have to shut that off. My apologies there.
That's a nice one.
Oh, that's why, because, okay. Okay, sorry, I had the Bluetooth on. So anyway, lost my train of thought. Now, what's the difference between slacklining and highlining?
So slacklining is kind of a general term for walking on a piece of webbing. And, you know, slacklining, it is up. It can be up high. It can be between trees, but the term highlining is kind of general to being up high. So it's usually when you put on a harness, safety harness, and a leash, and you're up quite high, that if you fall off and you don't have a safety, you would die. Basically,
it's a good thing. Now, I also read that you actually walked on the line blindfolded. So what is that like?
I personally love blindfold walking because, you know, when you're out there and, you know, you have to be comfortable being out there to be able to put a blindfold on and, you know, just let yourself go and just be peaceful in the moment in the darkness and just be comfortable. But one of the reasons why I love blindfold walking so much is that you kind of disconnect from your environment. You're not, it doesn't matter if you're thousands of meters high or if you're just off the ground. Once you just go into that state, you just relax into it and you just walk. You don't really worry about, you know, something you're seeing in the distance or anything like that. It's really just present in that exact moment. And it doesn't really matter. You just take that step and you just react on what you feel in that exact moment. Mm-hmm. And it's just lovely to be so connected in that second that I just love it.
I think I would get disoriented, especially, you know, you can't see the line. So basically, if you're barefoot, you got to literally rely on the feeling of your feet. And then if I was to fall, I would get so disoriented because not knowing which way is up. I mean, you'll know which way is up, but you know what I'm saying? It's just that feeling of trying to compose yourself to actually get back up. So definitely, you know, the only way I can walk blindfolded is at nighttime. If your house, if you know your house and the layout and it's dark, you can pretty much walk through it without hitting anything. But then every once in a while, there's always something that you stub your toe on and then you're like cussing up a storm, you know? So definitely walking like that blindfolded, that is even, see, I wish they would have showed that on the show because I don't recall seeing that at all.
They show a second or two of me walking blindfolded, but not much. I don't know if it's episode 2 or episode 3, there's like a tiny little area where I'm walking blindfold.
That may be one of the times when I had my phone, you know, so, wow, that's just crazy. So now I also read that, you hold the world record, basically of walking just under 2 kilometers, which in miles, it's 1.243 miles with Lucas Ermler of Germany, in 2018. Mm-hmm. So what's it like holding a world record? I mean, walking over a mile, you know, gosh, almost a mile and a half. Well, a little under a mile and a half. What is that like?
Yeah. Well, that line was actually, I think I walked the line in Quebec the first year, I think it was 2018, where it was just under 2 kilometers. And then we walked it again with Lucas Ermler that second year in 2019. And it was just under 2 kilometers. And it was quite a crazy experience to, you know, have to stay focused for that long. Technically, it's sometimes easier than shorter lines because it's so long that like movements and mistakes and wobbles that you make never reappear. And, you know, it's quite generally cruisy because of just the length and just everything kind of just flows very nicely on those big lines. The challenge is really to be mentally focused and stay, you know, in that right mindset, that right mind space to continue to the end without falling. So it's definitely quite a journey. Recently, though, Lucas and 3 other Germans just sent a new line that's, I think, 200 or 300 meters longer than my record. So now there's one more line that's a bit longer than that one, which I'm super stoked for them. It was a crazy project in Sweden this summer.
Wow, that's just crazy. I can't imagine walking that high up and not looking down. And I say this with respect, you are crazy, but hey, you know, you're doing something that you love. You know, it's they say if it's not work if you love it, you know. So I give you credit for that. Now let me ask you a question. Andy Lewis, man, that guy, he seems pretty cool, but man, he's like, he looks like he's crazy, man. He, you know, I saw him do the base jumping when he was butt naked, and I'm like, what in the world? It's like, that is so crazy. Does a lot of them do that?
Andy's quite a character. He definitely has his personality that's deep to him. He's fun to have around. I love slacklining and doing projects with him. I used to, pre-COVID, I used to go there usually once a year for the entire month of November. I would just go and adventure in Moab where Andy lives. Won't be going this year with everything, but he's a good guy to have around, full of energy. You know, there's so many different people that do base jump and highline, all these characters, but at the end of the day, you know, stuff like highlining as a project, and you know, you learn how to trust them and to an outside person, you know, you might think it's kind of crazy. And yeah, in some ways it kind of is. But when you get to really know the person, you know, even though what he does seems crazy when you look at it, it's still very calculated. He's built up to it. You know, it's not like, maybe he just bought a base rig and went and jumped off a cliff. But there's still a progression involved in getting where he is. So, like, it is crazy, but at the same time, from an outside's perspective, we don't see all the steps that he took to get to where he is, you know?
Well, that's crazy. We had a a church local to us. It's in the next city. And I don't know what the pastor was thinking of. This was years ago. He decided he wanted to do base jumping off the top of his church. And broke, I don't know if it was both legs, but I know he broke one of his legs. And, you know, it's like, hello, the top of your church is not that tall. It's not something, your chute's not going to, even if it did open, it's not going to be able to expand like it's supposed to. So, you know, but this happened probably 25 years ago, but it was crazy. So now Andy is supposed to be the godfather, basically, of this sport, because apparently, you know, he's the one that kind of set the standards for certain things. And it seems like when you guys come together, he's more like the oversees everything, because since he's been doing it, I guess, longer than everybody. Is that the case?
He's definitely, from all the cast on the show, he's definitely the one that's done it the longest. And he really, you know, was a big part in influencing where the sport went with trick lining and all the tricks and high lining. Like, he was, you know, there from not the very, very beginning, but, you know, he was very involved and grew with the sport, and which is really cool that the sport has changed a lot. Like, I've been highlining for a little over 6 years now. And when I started, slack lines had already changed into like this new era of like looser highlines and longer. Mm-hmm. Andy, he started back when they were still quite tight. It was quite technical. I'm not going to go into explaining all the differences, but the lines, like, it evolved within the years. And Andy started when they were rigged quite differently from what they're rigged now. And it's quite cool to see how, you know, he's transitioned and changed as the sport changes and keeps evolving with it, because it has changed so much from, you know, the young 20-year-old Andy to now.
How old is Andy?
Now?
Yeah.
I think he's in his mid-30s.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm almost 50. My goodness. I wish I was in my mid-30s. So we're going to go ahead and take another commercial break. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio.
Are you a military family with a spouse on deployment away from home? Did you know that nonprofit Project Evergreen has thousands of volunteers across the country ready to help military families with lawn, landscape, and snow removal services? We call it Green Care and Snow Care for troops. If you are a military family and would like to receive this free service, or if you'd like to volunteer to help, visit projectevergreen.org. Project Evergreen, creating a greener, healthier, cooler earth, one yard at a time.
Welcome back to The Jose Show. I am your host, Jose Roldan Jr., and tonight we're talking with highliner Mia Noble. All right, so one of the things I wanted to mention, and I wrote it down today, is Castleton Tower. That is huge. And to watch you and Ari climb that, like, I noticed you had those little, like, grips where you kind of grabs onto the rope. But then again, you got to have the upper body strength. But, like, what is it like literally scaling that tower? Is it scary?
You know, it's actually almost scarier than it is to highline the gap, because, like, when you're highlining, you know, you learn to trust your gear. You learn to look at anchors and be, okay, this is good, this is safe. And your line is not in contact with any rock, you know, between a span. So when you go up, we weren't rock climbing. It's called kind of ascending a rope. And we're only on one rope. So that rope is tied on several points. Like, it was several different sections of rope. And you use those handle ascenders and you just make your way up the rope. But, you know, the rope is in contact with, you know, rock. And that's almost the scariest part to me, because, you know, there's the possibilities of rubbing and abrasion on your rope if it's on a sharp corner. So to me, that's almost scarier than highlining. It is scarier than highlining.
Yeah, because when I seen the episode back when it first came on, and I kind of retouched it again today, you know, sometimes when you watch things twice, you see things that you probably saw on the first time, but you didn't really see it until you saw it again the second time. So I was under the impression it was just going to be you two up there. But then when the drone came and you saw the cameraman and you saw a bunch of people up there, I'm sure that was part of the camera crew. How in the world did they get up there? Like, did they have to climb?
As we did.
Really?
Yeah.
So are they professional climbers?
I don't think there's a couple people that were assisting, or kind of like PAs assisting the rig and helping out with certain things. And like the ropes that we climbed up, you know, somebody had to rock climb up to get it up there. And we're quite busy shooting other stuff for the show. So we had slackliners and climbers, like friends of like the cast that came and during the show, like they were working for the show, and they rock climbed up and led up the top of the towers and fixed rope for us to, you know, get to the top easier. So a few of the people on top with me and Ari there are some of our friends that were kind of backseat helping set up and rig. But yeah, they came up the same way we did. And there was one camera guy on our side, and he had to come up exactly how we did. They made sure that they had a couple people that were comfortable with that environment.
Yeah, I would be staying on the ground with the camera.
There was plenty of people on the ground, and there was also plenty of people on the other side, the other tower. We had a little winch system that we could just haul people up because it was easier,
More
direct. So the other side, we had a couple more of the camera crew, sound guys, directors that were coming up the other side. And
we didn't see that. So
yeah, no, we didn't see that.
Oh, wow. So you had to run the wire or the rope or the line to the rectory. And then, you know, once you and Ari were trying to get the line, you know, put on the bolts that are up there, you had the wrong bolts. How, you know, who was in charge of actually having the right bolts?
Well, you know,
or nuts, not bolts, the nuts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the nuts. Yeah. There, you know, on that kind of thing, there's so much happening all the time. You know, there's so much prep involved. And, you know, that was a little detail, a very important detail, but I think it was kind of, you know, we didn't maybe put in as much time, like confirm that it was the right one. Cause I had rigged Castleton once in the past. Andy had been a part of two or three times before that. And, you know, we kind of just went with what he thought it was, and we didn't really question it. And it just kind of just maybe was left out and not taken care as seriously as we should have, cause it is an important small detail. But to me, when I look at that, it was not really anybody's fault. It was just, you know, you're always just going from one thing to the next, and there's so much involved in the process that it was kind of a little detail, important one that was left out.
Yeah, because when he said, you know, let's like tape it, in my mind I'm like, no, I mean, no matter what kind of tape you put on there, you know, once the weight gets on there, you know, that thing's gonna pop up, and like, you know, in my mind, and I'm like, I don't want these people to die. I mean, I don't know them, but you know, taping is just not the so I'm glad that they were able to with the drone fly up the right bolts and keep it secure. Now, to keep that bolt secure, though, do you use like some kind of lock too? Because even a bolt could come off eventually if it's not tightened securely.
Yeah, well, it's a proper, like the bolt is in the rock and that doesn't come out. Like if you want to take the bolt itself, it's an expansion bolt. So like once you've drilled the hole, you put the bolt in, it kind of expands in the hole and it's not coming out. The only like it could rust eventually with time, especially if you're around like ocean or like salt. But then she could rest on the inside, or like, you know, eventually, like, you know, towers, they crumble down, they fall. So like there's plenty of things that you have to be careful with. But generally, once a bolt is in the rock and it's a good bolt, you're usually, you know, you're trusting it. And on top of that, like the bolt, you just, the nut that you put on top, you kind of wrench it tight and down. And really, like if you think of a bolt sticking out of the rock, the tension of the line is pulling kind of straight. So it's not going to pop up. Like it's not really supposed to, it's pulling, there's quite a bit of forces that are pulling across, so it wouldn't really, you know, pop up. But you know, if the wind picks up, if you know, there's always, you know, what if. And for me, I was not going to get on if you didn't have the proper gear for it, and someone like Andy would, somehow he was feeling comfortable with it. And you know, to each their own, to figure out where their comfort zone and where their safety is. But yeah, for me it was like not a question, I wasn't going on if it was taped. But, and especially not for like, you know, if it's a short line and you're a couple of friends, it's one thing, you know, maybe you'll risk yourself a little bit more on certain equation. Mm-hmm. But if you're, you know, filming a show for an entire month and you have, you know, a whole camera crew and like all this time and effort invested into the show, like you can't, to me, it's not acceptable to mess up like that.
Yeah. I can imagine that, you know, I know it's fun, but you got to make sure it's safe. And yeah, I wouldn't want to do it either if it was not safe. I mean, if they wanted to do it, you know, that's on them. And, you know, I know we got to die sometime, but you know, like I'm not ready to die tonight with this thing, you know, not being properly secure. But now what does your parents think about you doing this?
they both rock climb when they were young.
Really?
So they've always, Yeah, they both, my family's from France originally, and they got into rock climbing and they did a bunch of hiking. So it's not, and my dad's a pilot. So there's always been the adventurous outdoors kind of life that I grew up doing. So they don't mind at all. They're always still see pictures. I actually have a little home line here over a river. I just went for that's rigged for like 3-4 days, and I'll take it down and, you know, I'll re-rig it maybe a couple weeks later. And my mom just came with me for a little session earlier today.
So, oh, wow.
They're around. She'll come. She's zipped out on the high lines on the, I don't know if you know this, little pulley that we clip the line, you can roll.
Yeah.
She goes on a few high lines with those and sat on the high line, went for a little zip. They don't mind it.
That's pretty cool. Now, do you have any siblings that does this, or?
I have two brothers. They both can slackline in the park. None of them have ever highlined. My older brother is actually part of search and rescue, and he's a photographer, pilot, mountaineer, climber. So he's actually come and helped me a lot break some lines in the Alpine. So we've done quite a few projects with my brother.
Oh, that's pretty cool, man. So basically the whole family is kind of involved in almost similar things. That's pretty cool.
My younger brother did probably in 2015 now, he did a rope swing with me. We both went, we tied ourselves together. It was like you see on the show, but it was a bit of a smaller one, not between Squamish and Whistler on the coast. Mm-hmm. And we both jumped the duo rope swing, and he was quite stoked.
Oh man, gosh, you guys are crazy, but that is cool. That's what you like to do, and nothing wrong with that. Now, how many countries have you visited and done this?
Good question. Probably 15, 16 countries. And I've highlined actually in 6 of the 7 continents. I'm only missing Antarctica. I've highlined every other continent. Oh
man, that is amazing. Do you think you'll ever get to do Antarctica?
We'll see. I would love to. There's definitely, like, I'd love to go to Baffin Islands. There's a lot of different areas that I'd love to explore, but Antarctica would definitely be one. But quite a mission to get there and to, you know, have the right crew, the right project to be able to find it. So it's definitely on the list somewhere. And if the opportunity seems to come, then I'll take it.
You know, it's amazing how you said that, because, you know, since I started this podcast, my podcast is, you know, when I pick the topic, my topic is whatever I want. I don't have a specific topic, you know, so I'm talking to you about highlining. I talk to actors. I've talked to directors. I've spoken to people in Australia, Canada, England. I just talked to somebody from England this weekend. And one of my goals is, you know, I'll probably never go to Antarctica, but I would like to talk to one of the scientists or one of the engineers that's over there, because, you know, it's just so cool that they have so many bases from a lot of countries. And I think that would be awesome to see what it's like to live over there 6 months, or I'm sure some of them live a year at a time. And so that's kind of my goal, just like your goal is to, you know, do highlighting there. So we kind of have similar goals, just mine's a little different than yours. So that's one of my goals. So maybe we can work this out together one day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's possible. We'll see what happens. Cool. I'm not yet in the process of trying to plan one there, because it takes a lot of effort, but I'm leaving it open, and you know, you never know what comes out, but lots of potential.
There you go. Now, let me ask you a question. When you guys get together, say in Moab or wherever you go, usually how many people are involved in the highlining at one particular time or any particular time?
Totally depends. Like, I've done projects around my hometown here where, you know, you're 3 people, and I've rigged some stuff in sometimes drive from Vancouver. I used to drive down with Spencer from Vancouver to Moab, and we'd show up at Andy's house, and the next day, and he's like, yeah, let's go rig this tower line. We'd be 4 of us, and we'd go rig this line. So sometimes, okay, you know, you'd be a small crew, it's not crazy long of a line. And sometimes in Moab in November, generally there's a bit of a gathering of a lot of highliners that pre-COVID would come from all over the world. And sometimes, you know, you'd be 200 people there all highlining. So it varies a lot.
Okay. Now, do you know it? Well, you probably can't say, and if you can't understand, is there going to be a season 2?
No, that is a good question. I heard a lot of people would love one. At this point, I think it's too early to know where it's going to go, because the last episode was not released that long ago, but we'll see what happens. It's a possibility.
That's cool. And hopefully it does, because I want to watch it so I can be scared again. It's like watching a horror movie. Like I said, you're constantly, so
I'm sure if there's one that comes, it will be exciting.
I'm sure it was. Now, other than highlighting, do you have any other hobbies that you like to do?
I love to ski. And actually, I've combined a lot of backcountry touring on skis with highlining. So hiking in the winter and by ski access and kind of the backcountry. I do like to climb. I put most of my time towards highlining, so I want to dedicate more time to the climb as well. But anything in the mountains, being on the water, being on rock, on snow, I kind of like anything that's outdoor. I'd love to learn how to paraglide. I'm going to stay away from base jumping, I think, because it's not worth the risk for me. I'd rather, paraglide, which is considered to be safer and actually fly and, free falling. So there's definitely a lot of things, even though I did a tandem with Andy, a base jump tandem with Andy. He has a little business that he runs out of Moab. So I love anything that's outdoorsy and adventurous. Some things, I'm happy to try once or twice, but others I want to do a lot more. But climbing, flying, I'd love to get into. So lots of things.
Now that paraglide, isn't that where you wear like a suit and you're like a squirrel, like it all pops out and you're like flying almost?
No, those are the wingsuits.
Okay.
Even more dangerous than the base jumping.
Really?
I believe, well, it depends how you do it. If you fly away from mountains, then you might be as safe. It's a lot more technical. You have to really navigate your body. And usually people, they go quite close to cliffs and stuff. And in my opinion, it's more dangerous. You still only have one parachute on your back. And if that doesn't go, you're in trouble. But the paragliding is a wing. You inflate it before you run off. And it's not falling. You're not going down. You can catch thermals and go up.
Oh, okay.
And you can soar. And you have a parachute as an emergency, as a backup. But your main wing is meant to fly for a long time. And it's meant to catch thermals like birds and go up. Airy actually on the show. He's a very good pilot, a very good paraglider pilot, and he does a lot of that.
I guess that's kind of like when I'm playing Mario Kart and I jump. I got the little pair thing, I guess, and I can kind of go like this, flying in the air.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a commercial break, and then when we come back, you can share your social medias and give us your final thoughts. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio.
Hey, Turfs Up Radio fans, do you know what time it is? That's right, it's time for Turfs Up Radio. Now you can catch us streaming live 24/7 with pro talk, pro tips, and pro interviews. Simply visit turfsupradio.com.
And welcome back to The Jose Show. I am your host, Jose Roldan Jr. Tonight we're talking with highliner Mia Noble. All right, Mia, so if you have any final words, advice that you would like to give, go ahead and share that and then share your social medias.
All right. Well, it's actually one of the cool things about the whole show was I had so many feedback from people who are stoked on it, and a lot of people that were excited to go find a line and go start practicing in the park. So it's so cool to get that feedback. People that watch the show, and I encourage people to go buy their slack lines, go rig in the park and have fun. You don't need to rig it up high. If what you have is a garden and two trees, and start there, and that can be plenty enough. You don't necessarily need to make it that crazy and that high. You can have just as much fun on the little line with these. So I encourage people to go get one and have fun. It's a good practice, good balance, good place where it makes you focus. I know so many people that on tests and school years or university, sometimes you just need to zone out from all the things you need to do. And slackline is a good way to just regroup and be with yourself.
Cool beans, man. All right. I like that. And you got any social medias you'd like to share?
Yeah, well, I don't really have a Facebook page because I try to keep away from social media usually. I'm kind of out and about usually, but my best social media to follow what I do is Instagram. It's my name, M-I-A, Noblet, N-O-B-L-E-T. I post most of my adventures and pictures on there.
Yes, I've seen plenty of them. That's cool. And if you would like to get a hold of The Jose Show, I am on Facebook. Just search for The Jose Show. I have a page and a group, and on Twitter, I am at Jose Roldan Jr. That's at JoseRoldan Jr. And on Instagram, I am The Jose Roldan. That's TheJoseRoldan. And tonight we were talking with Mia Noble from Pushing the Line. I thank you for being on the show. It's been a pleasure, that you're spending time with me. It's always cool to talk to people to see and hear what they do. And, it's just amazing that you do something like this. And had I never started this show, I probably would never be talking to you, actually. So, it's just nice to hear from the other side, so to speak. And, because there's so much out there that nobody knows about. And I'm just trying to help educate them. And, maybe this is something that, hey, we listen to this episode or whatever, and man, this is a sport that I'd like to try, you know. So that's why, you know, I do this podcast to help inform, to help teach. And thank you so much for spending time with me tonight.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
And make sure you share this episode with your friends, families, and enemies, because they may not be your enemies anymore. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio.
Thanks for listening to The Jose Show. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And see you next time on The Jose Show.